And joining me in the KRVS studios is Barry Ancelet. He's a professor of modern languages here at UL Lafayette, a folklorist, a poet, and film buff, and many, many other chapeaus he wears beautifully. He's here today to talk about a film series. It's called Images of South Louisiana in Film, Responsibility in Representation. He's curating this film series at the request of both the Friends of the Humanities and the College of Liberal Arts here at UL Lafayette. Both of those organizations are very interested in encouraging people to participate in culture and discussion, and also
I would say, you know, to take the academic discussion out there into the community, because there are really smart people around here, and I've always felt that, you know, one of the principal roles of this university, you know, where we are, is to share what we are talking about and what we're discovering and what we're doing. This is, you know, the last thing I would ever want to, you know, find myself doing is navel gazing. You know, I always feel like this is a huge recycling plant.
That's a good way to put it. Well, and you're right. We don't want to just be an ivory tower where things just happen within this community.
Yeah,
we want to share that.
Incidentally, back in the 1970s, Roger Abrams, who was then president of the American Folklore Society, singled out USL at the time for in his address to the his annual address to the American Folklore Society, he singled out USL. It said that this university was to be commended for willingly coming down out of its ivory tower and involving itself in a meaningful way in the community it found itself in. I think that's always been the case here.
Well, and especially the folklore program has been at the fore of that.
Always had an outreach program.
Absolutely.
And this film series is a little bit, in that tradition. It occurred to when I was talking to Sally Donlan and some of the Friends of the Humanities, they were talking about doing something with film, and I just said, you know, I bet you that there are a lot of the historically important classic documentaries and films that were done on South Louisiana culture, most people have not really actually seen them. They were either too long ago or, you know, and some people talk about them. People talk about Louisiana Story and Spend It All and these things. But I wonder aloud how many people actually saw them. And they said, well, why don't we do that? You know, let's give people a chance to see them and discuss them. So we started the series with Louisiana Story, which is from 1948. And we took a look at the hidden truths that maybe even Flaherty didn't realize he was dealing with. You know, when that big boat, when the oil boat goes by and swamps the pirogue, and you see the waves hitting against the bank, you're just like, oh wow, you know, with what we now know, that was the beginning of coastal erosion and cultural erosion and all kinds of other things. So we took a look at Louisiana Story. Then the second one we took a look at was Les Blank's classic Spend It All. And we took a look at to see, you know, how we felt it portrayed South Louisiana culture. And it focuses a lot on performance, music and food and Mardi Gras and things like the performance culture. And some people were wondering aloud, you know, yeah, but where's the rest of us?
Mm.
You
know, what, mm-hmm. you those know? Of us who don't perform,
yeah.
Yes.
And then this upcoming one is going to. I mentioned those two to give your listeners
Absolutely.
A sense of the momentum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This next one is a documentary Spend It All was from 71. This one is from 75. It was by a group called TVTV, Top Value Television. Led by Paul Goldsmith and a few other folks who were part of an experiment that sometimes referred to as guerrilla television. It was using television's mobility, its quickness as compared to film. The brand new technology of videotape and the ability to shoot, you know, literally hundreds of hours rather than just a few minutes to base something on. It's called The Good Times Are Killing Me. The group that did this was funded prominently by Ford and Rockefeller. The program aired on PBS nationally. And they had previously done a few films. They were connected to Bill Murray and Second City, and there's a lot of, you know, satire and parody, and they were taking hard satirical looks at politics, the national conventions, some major political figures such as Gerald Ford, and they were taking satirical shots at powerful figures. When they came to why they came to South Louisiana, I don't know exactly. Although Paul Goldsmith and a few other people involved in the project had worked for Jean-Pierre Bruneau the year previous, and apparently discovered this area, were fascinated by it, said, "Let's go do something there." And their intent was to do something for the first time on a subject that they actually liked, as opposed to a subject they were trying to make fun of. Turns out they couldn't pull back.
They were too much in the habit.
And you know, the result, the end result, was pretty brutal. Dewey Balfa, who helped them a great deal, making contacts and setting things up and squiring them around and showing them things, they didn't have a PBS access in Basile at the time in 75 when it aired. So he drove all the way to Beaumont to see it with some family members. And he said, as he told me, I wept all the way home. You know, from seeing how my
what he had done had been used in that film. I do want to tell people that they can see this film this coming Sunday on the 16th. So as you're describing it and talking about both the series and this particular film, The Good Times Are Killing Me, it's a free series. Mm-hmm. Everyone is invited to participate.
It's in Oliver Hall,
which is the new computer science building.
Right. It's where McNaspy Stadium used to be.
Right. So just go to McNaspy as if you're going to run track. And you'll find Oliver Hall. It's in the auditorium, very comfortable place to
first
show
floor.
A film. So now, film has been something you've been interested in a long time. I know you teach a class on representations of Louisiana in film.
Responsibility and representation.
Right. Yeah. And have those primarily been narrative fiction films?
Both.
Both, narrative and also documentary.
Both. I have been wondering about the issue of responsibility both in documentaries and fictional films. Fictional films are, by their very nature, fiction, of course, so it's harder to to grab that issue. To what extent does a fictional film need to be quote accurate unquote?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to what extent what responsibility does it have to verisimilitude? You know, the example I was using before we went on the air. if you show me in the opening scenes of a movie, the French Quarter and the Superdome and the Huey P. Long Bridge, and that's okay. I understand. I'm in New Orleans, and then if you show me the character walking by the Brooklyn Bridge, I say, whoa, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. You can't mess that much with reality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
you could if it's a Monty Python movie, or
yes.
if, you know, if I know it's a fantasy, okay, mm-hmm. But if you're asking me to believe that we're in a
suspend
place,
suspend your disbelief
you have to,
here.
You have, mm-hmm. There are certain things you have to respect.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, those things are not only landscape; they're also they ought to also be, you know, cultural issues.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, but with fictional film, it's harder. With documentaries, you ought to be able to expect a certain amount of accuracy because they're purporting to show you what really is happening,
right.
Particularly in the case of. More recent documentaries, which were using what sometimes is called cinema direct or cinema de vérité, where the viewer feels like he's discovering along with the camera what's happening in front of it. There's no direction, there's no manipulation, as opposed to Louisiana Story, where Flaherty was actually directing scenes.
Mm-hmm. So is this series continuing forward in chronological order, or do the films get more and more current?
Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. This one was from 75. And then in the fourth week, we're going to take a look at some outtakes from feature films. Hard Times, Southern Comfort, The Big Easy, just to see how what Hollywood did after having apparently consulted the documentaries that were available. Because, you know, a Hollywood director is going to go and do something somewhere. Mm-hmm. He has a team of people that he tells to do some homework, see what does this place look like? What does it sound like? How does it feel? And where they were going was the existing stock of documentaries.
That was I never thought about that. It was a fascinating point that you made, that all of those directors.
Yeah, I mean, TVTV was both situated in New York and Los Angeles. Les Blank was in San Francisco, was in California, and all of those things were available. You know, those were the images that were available. I mean, when you see the boucherie scene in Southern Comfort.
It comes right out of one of those earlier documentaries.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So we're going to take a look at the fourth week. This is April 8th. We're going to take a look at some clips. We can't see 20 films, mm-hmm. but I'll show clips from 20 films to explore how some of these issues were getting portrayed by Hollywood. And then in the fifth week, we're going to bring it home. And really the only answer to any feelings we may be having of being misrepresented, no amount of complaining works. We tried that, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember, if anybody listening would remember the Knight Rider series, when that guy is solving crime with the help of a computerized car named Kit. And one of the scenes, the segments is staged here in South Louisiana, and at one point, you know, he shows this Cajun man beating up his wife because she has been unaware of his criminal activity and inadvertently helping to solve the crime. And when he finds out, he beats her up, and as she's protesting, you know, he says, "Well, you know how us Cajun men are." And then knocks her down and sets fire to the cabin and leaves.
I would love to see a picture of your face when you first saw that, Barry.
So we complained to NBC and said, you know, that is a terrible misrepresentation. Akin to the way people began to complain about the shuckin' and jivin' portrayals of African Americans in early films, yeah. Or the engines of cowboy and Indian stories in the westerns. You know, people they were presented as simple minded straw villains or savages. You can't do that. You can't get away with that anymore because people won't tolerate it anymore. Well, we ought to be able to do the same thing. Well, we tried to complain, and NBC just blew us off. And it occurred to me that we don't have enough critical mass to pull off a complaint. But what we can do is take control of the storytelling process ourselves and tell our own stories, mm-hmm. and at least have them out there to help balance off the story. And so the fifth week we're going to feature short documentaries by Connie Castile and Pat Meir. And there are many other filmmakers who have been participating in this as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just to show the kinds of stories that people from here thought to do once they got access to the storytelling machine.
Well, and as we were saying a little bit earlier, that is reaching an interesting critical mass in South Louisiana or all over Louisiana, with filmmakers coming here and people telling their own stories.
Yeah, and in some cases, the filmmakers come here and tell their own stories and completely skew the thing. Mm-hmm. In other cases, they listen. They ask people from here, how does this work? What is going on? And they actually pay attention. And so sometimes it works better than others.
Right.
Getting back to this March 16th showing, by the way, The Good Times Are Killing Me, it's a very problematic documentary.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's so problematic, it never fails to generate a really interesting discussion. And what I've done this time is I've invited some of the ladies who were in the beauty shop scene and some of the men who were in the Mardi Gras scene to come to talk about what it was like to collaborate with the film crew.
Wow, Barry. What a perfect reason to attend that film if people weren't already writing it on their calendars. This is going to be on Sunday at 3 o'clock. As you said, lots of discussion is encouraged. You're there as the curator of the film series. What have been some of the responses so far in discussions?
It's been really fascinating. You know, we live in a community filled with smart people. and you know, they come see the film, the first two that we've showed, and there has been some really penetrating, genuine discussion about what this all means and what, if anything, we can or should do about it. You know, what are some of the answers of being concerning the problem of being either misrepresented or partially represented.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, I'm sure there will be lots of spin-off discussions from this as well, people bringing in their observations and responses to more current films as well. So you're welcome to bring those to the film. The film will be shown at 3 o'clock in Oliver Hall on the UL campus. Oliver Hall, as Barry said, is where McNally